Hello, you're listening to a preview of a premium episode of Blocked and Reported. You're going to hear me and Katie Herzog, the Katie Herzog, talk about Gamergate, a little known and undercovered online controversy. If you want to hear the full Gamergate segment, as well as some new stuff about the WPATH files and American transportation, go to blockedandreported.org, where for just $5 a month and up, you will get 3 extra episodes just like this one each and every month. Thank you. Enjoy the preview. So this episode was going to be about this controversy involving this narrative game design studio called Sweet Baby Incorporated. I tried to write the episode that way or structure it that way. It's really impossible to understand why this controversy matters without talking about Gamergate. This episode is going to be about Gamergate, and I think we'll probably have to do Sweet Baby Incorporated the next primo. We've gotten like a weird number of requests to do something on Gamergate. I've sort of like danced around the subject, mostly because I'm a coward. It's just this really complicated, annoying controversy. And it was sort of formative for me because I think it was like one of the first times some of my writing caught on a little bit. This was almost a full decade ago at this point. We're coming up on the 10-year anniversary. So Katie, what do you think you know about Gamergate as a girl trying to destroy video games?
Gamergate was about either ethics in gaming journalism, or it was about incels and the patriarchy, and I'm not sure which of those is true. It was one or the other.
So Wikipedia has come down on one side of that. They describe Gamergate GG was a loosely organized misogynistic online harassment campaign and a right-wing backlash against feminism, diversity, and progressivism in video game culture. It was conducted using the hashtag Gamergate, primarily in 2014 and 2015. Beginning in August 2014, Gamergate targeted women in the video game industry, most notably feminist media critic Anita Sarkeesian and video game developer Zoe Quinn and friend of the pod, Brianna Wu. The harassment campaign included included doxing, rape threats, and death threats. And this is like the version of it I think most mainstream journalists would give you. There's elements of truth to it, but I think it's a bit of an oversimplification. The problem is, 10 years later, this controversy is now caked with like so many layers of just grime of politics and agendas and internet lore and rumors and just general like human failure to thrive. So partly this starts with a game developer named Zoe Quinn. She had a game named Depression Quest, originally released in 2013. It's a text-based game about what it's like to be depressed.
Fun!
I don't need to play it. That's just my life. The other joke here is like, I haven't played it lately because I'm just not enjoying activities I used to enjoy as much.
Yeah.
You get that?
Yeah.
Does that parse?
Yeah.
So this was not like, I mean, the stereotype of video game is like you stomp on turtles or you shoot monsters. This is obviously very different.
You move blocks around. That's what I love in a game.
You move blocks around to cure your depression, mm-hmm. or you have OCD, so you put the blocks in like a tight.
Yes.
Oh man, OCD Simulator 2024. So one storyline would come to be that gamers were just mad about the intrusion of like artsiness and literary themes and social justice into gaming. Depression Quest is a much more feminine coded endeavor than Halo.
Oh God, that is a bummer.
What do you mean?
The gals get Depression Quest. The boys get like in shooting Nazis.
Well, it's like the effects of testosterone makes you feel exuberant and you want to shoot aliens or Nazis. Estrogen makes you want to go write a game about your depression
and kill yourself. Yeah.
And kill yourself. Suicide simulator. So what one like interpretation is like gamers were furious that games were changing and becoming different and more artsy. I think there's like a small subset of immature gamers who feel that way, and that partially explains Gamergate. But I think most gamers like understand that they can just ignore games they don't like, and this whole thing goes a little bit beyond that. So what really kicked off Gamergate was this gargantuan blog post written about Zoe Quinn, this developer, by their ex, Aaron Ganji. I should know how to pronounce that by now, but I don't. This was August 2014. It's something like 8,000 words long.
Oh my God, that's like Andrea Chu long. What is this about?
Okay, so it's this epic screed, this tragic screed written the way only a jilted young man could write it, about how he felt like quite emotionally abused by Zoe Quinn, because she had manipulated him and cheated on him and lied to him. And I couldn't possibly do this post justice. So in the grand tradition of BarPod, I'm going to force you to read part of it that will hopefully make you feel uncomfortable. Please go for it.
How this works is I've had two possible pictures in my head for the past month. One that looked like some ransom note collage of letters scotch taped over a cum-covered canvas spelling out Zoe Quinn is the best person, best possible person.
I'm sorry, Katie, you spiked. Could you say cum-covered canvas three more times and we'll just do the best take?
You are a bad person if you think Zoe is not the best person. Another is in the form of a precision-carved jigsaw puzzle for which all of the pieces I wasn't missing fit perfectly into what seemed to be a subtly worded message to the effect of, lol, you're an idiot, she's a jerk, flip me over for a list of dates and names of people she's cheated on you with. How this works is I've been telling myself, nah, this can't be what the jigsaw puzzle means. Look, this cum collage Zoe gave me says so. I don't understand this at all.
It just goes on like that for thousands
8,000 words.
Yeah, cum collage.
Does he at least give us a picture of the collage?
I don't know. Where did he come up with the cum collage? What relationship would be so fucked up that like the image that comes out of that relationship is a cum collage?
I don't know what that is. I would like you to stop saying it.
But I'm guessing one of your responses to that paragraph is, why do I know this now, right? Like, something's now in your head that shouldn't be.
I mean, that's the nature of this podcast. What's with this guy's deal?
It's hard to say. He just seems like he was a very heartbroken, vindictive young man. I don't get the sense he and Quinn were good for one another. There's all these chat logs. He's just airing all their dirty laundry. It doesn't seem like either of them was in a particularly healthy place at the time.
God, you know, this, like, if he had done this later, like, do you know about this woman on TikTok who has done this, like, 60-part series that's gone incredibly viral where she's talking about her husband? It's called, like, Who Did I Marry? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I'm not. This is why I'm not on TikTok.
Dude, I heard about this on NPR. Like, I don't know why I'm not on the internet. So this woman, she married like a con artist and she's been doing this series. I mean, it's like literally like dozens of parts on TikTok where she details all of the dirty shit in her marriage, and it's become like, it'll probably be a fucking TV show. He was just ahead of his time and a man.
She probably doesn't use the term cum collage, right?
Probably not. Okay, so besides cheating on her, what else does he accuse her of? Anything?
It's mostly just lying to him and manipulating him. I don't think he uses the term emotional abuse, but like in 2020, someone probably would have used this term. He seems to be totally in love with her. He keeps giving her more chances despite what he describes as endless lies about her infidelities and so on. This is obviously his side of it. It's a totally broken relationship.
And do we know why he decided to make this public?
I do not think there was any particular reason. It seems like an early
anger.
Yeah, right. Like, it seems like this somewhat early and particularly potent example of this thing that would unfortunately become common, which is people taking to social media to make their private beefs public, leading to the person they're in conflict with to become a figure of public shaming. So that would have been bad enough, but because one of the people Ganji accused Quinn of sleeping with was this guy Nathan Grayson, and he worked for Kotaku and had written about Zoe Quinn in like a positive way, suddenly there's this subplot where there's this thread in here, in this Byzantine, awful, failed romance that no one would have cared about otherwise. There's this thread of like, there's a problem with ethics in journalism, and that sort of became the story here.
So was the accusation that she slept with this guy to get a positive review of her game?
It became like a weird version of that. So this is such a nerdy and annoyingly Byzantine controversy that there's thousands of words in online forums on Reddit disputing every possible factual point about it. I'm not talking about just this, the Zoe post as it's called, but all of Gamergate. So it's disputed even what Gamergaters claimed. Gamergate would come to be the folks mad at Zoe Quinn about this. Some people said they claimed that she slept with him for a positive review. Other people pointed out Nathan Grayson never even wrote a review. He covered her in other ways. And I think if I have the timeline straight, and we'll include a link, Katie, we'll include a link to the moderate anti-Gamergate subreddit. There were multiple anti-Gamergate subreddits. There's a moderate one and there's a radical one. So that's where we're at with this thing. At the end of the day, none of this matters. Zoe Quinn was not a major figure in anything. Nathan Grayson was some random guy writing for Kotaku, and it's crazy that this blew up the way it did. And I think that's the big question, because the point is, like, fundamentally, it's not good to like write about someone and not identify them as your friend, but this is not like a ABC World News correspondent, right? It's just a random video game website.
Okay, sure. But how did this go from one guy's butthurt blog post about his girlfriend cheating on her?
Cum collage. One guy's cum collage.
To Gamergate. How did it become this giant story that we're talking about 10 years later?
So I think like if this had been a nerd from the geology community and he'd posted an angry screed about how his girlfriend, a fellow geologist, had jilted him, no one would have heard about any of this. But it's the combination of certain gamers and certain social justice feminist types that just proved absolutely explosive. I think a few things were happening at once here. One was that this occurred during, I mean, tell me if you agree with this. I feel like 2014, when this happened, was either the peak or past the peak of sort of like Jezebel branded feminism. Do you think that timeline is right?
Yeah, I have no idea about their traffic, but like I think I had stopped reading Jezebel in 2014. I probably read Jezebel most in like 2010, probably like, yeah, 2009 to like 2012 maybe.
I think this brand of online feminism was still a pretty big deal in 2014. And obviously like with any other movement, it's complicated. It was an important movement in a lot of ways. Like, men had obviously gotten away with a lot of brazenly bad shit, especially in media. I had a friend who was relentlessly sexually harassed by like one of her superiors working at a newspaper. I'm sure you have stories like that.
Oh yeah. Dude, men love me. I get sexually harassed all the time.
Okay, sugar tits. But I do think like there was this other side to online feminism that was pretty sort of superficial and mean and thoughtless. And when that brand of online feminism got pulled toward certain gaming communities by Gamergate, they would sort of like paste on their usual complaints about society and attribute them to gamers. So they would repeat this idea that games and games journalism were dominated by white males and therefore they had some sort of power over everyone else and they were trying to keep others out of the clubhouse.
I mean, wouldn't it be true that, I'm just assuming here, but I'm guessing from the demographics of like who plays games, and I'm totally generalizing here, but wouldn't it be true that gaming journalism probably was dominated by white men? I mean, you could probably say the same thing about sports right. journalism or...
Well, so this became more about gamers than game journalists. On the anti-Gamergate side, it's more they're furious at gamers who they see as misogynistic and harassers and as like entitled white males. And there's an element of truth to like the white male thing in terms of gamers, but it's also pretty shallow analysis because especially in 2014, the sorts of people who are really into video games are not cool. Like they don't feel privileged. A lot of them are white males, but it's just not going to go over as well to tell them they're privileged because of how they felt. It's like, it's not the same. It's much lower stakes, but it's like wandering around an opioid ravaged town in West Virginia lecturing people about white privilege, right?
Right. It's almost like punching down.
Jezebel was punching down.
We got the real losers here. Yeah.
Right. I think like a lot of people doing the lecturing about these evil white men, these gamers, were feminist mean girl types who did seem to like enjoy some cultural cachet and mainstream acceptance. They were the cool kids. So it's this weird dynamic where like a photogenic 20-something from Jezebel is yelling at you, the gamer, about how you're oppressing her. And in some global sense, she's right, because men have oppressed women, blah, blah, blah. But like, it's sort of ridiculous because from your point of view as this gamer, this is someone who has way more social power and acceptance than you do. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
There's a 2015 Scott Alexander article that I think really captures this well. So he focused on this big figure in the rationalist blogosphere, Scott Aronson, who had written a piece that was sort of a response to like certain forms of mean girl feminism, where he talked about how like far from being a creepy harasser in his 20s, he was terrified of women. So Katie, will you read this excerpt of Scott Aronson's piece?
Here's the thing. I spent my formative years, basically from the age of 12 until my mid-20s, feeling not entitled, not privileged, but terrified. I was terrified that one of my female classmates would somehow find out that I sexually desired her, and that the instant she did, I would be scorned, laughed at, called a creep and a weirdo, maybe even expelled from school or sent to prison. You can call that my personal psychological problem if you want, but it was strongly reinforced by everything I picked up from my environment. To take one example, the sexual assault prevention workshops we had to attend regularly as undergrads, with their endless lists of all the forms of human interaction that might be sexual harassment or assault, and their refusal ever to specify anything that definitely wouldn't be sexual harassment or assault, I left each of these workshops with enough fresh paranoia and self-hatred to last me through another year. My recurring fantasy through this period was to have been born a woman or a gay man or, best of all, completely asexual so that I could simply devote my life to math like my hero, Paul Erdos. Who's that?
I don't know. It's a mathematician. So look, this guy is obviously pretty fucked up.
He can become a woman. He was
before his time. Yeah. All right. So that's that. I think that's undeniably sad and personal, even if you think he took it too far or was a little bit of a weirdo. Katie, now read how Amanda Marcotte summed this article up, as also mentioned by Scott Alexander.
Quote, how can men be oppressed when I don't get to have sex with all the hot women I want without having to work for it? Wine, one that, amongst other things, starts on the assumption that women do not suffer things like social anxiety or rejection. It was just a yelp of entitlement combined with an aggressive unwillingness to accept that women are human beings like men. He is saying that, quote, having to explain my suffering to women when they should already be there, mopping my brow and offering me beers and blowjobs is so tiresome. I was too busy jacking off, throwing tantrums, and making sure.
And that's just asking questions off, jacking off.
Oh, is that what that comes from?
Yeah.
I was too busy jacking off, throwing tantrums, and making sure the chip on my shoulder was felt by everyone in the room to be bothered to do something like listen. Women are failing him by not showing up naked in his bed unbidden because bitches, yo. This is extremely unfair.
I was going to say, like, is that a fair summary of what Scott Aronson, this poor schmuck who was so terrified of women, rightly or wrongly, that he wanted to become a woman?
Amanda Marcotte. This is exactly what I would expect from Amanda Marcotte. She is such a bad faith critic.
She is. And I think she exemplified this style. I think it's gone out of style, but I think in 2014, whenever we think the peak was, this style of like mean girl feminism.
They've just fucking closed down.
Yeah.
It's gone out of style because there ain't no market for that shit.
But it's tricky because like it is good. There was a feminist blogosphere. It was good. We went from the internet being totally male dominated to something closer to equitable. But this style of like, oh, fuck you, you white man, you creep, you rapist, like it doesn't go over well in general, but it particularly does not go over well if you're a gamer and you feel like these virtual worlds are your refuge. And I'm not saying that to excuse some of the behavior we're going to talk about, but like I think that's sort of an explanation for why this became such a flashpoint over such a minor failed relationship, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is like the nerds versus the cool girls, and it's not actually the nerds who have the power in the situation.
So yeah, I think there was like a lot of sort of hurt and talking past one another, and I think Zoe Quinn, that's it. Hope you enjoyed the preview. If you want to hear the whole thing, go to blockreport.org. Goodbye.